And when we last looked at Jacob's life, he had just finished this wrestling match with God. This wrestling match left him crippled for life as a reminder of this struggle that he has had for the entirety of his life, both with God and with man. And what is most significant in this encounter with God is found, at least in my opinion, in verse 28. With God speaking, he says, "Your name shall no longer be Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed." So first of all, the name change is important because Jacob will no longer be known as the deceiver. He will now be known as Israel, the namesake for the people of God. That's huge. Jacob, for all of his life, from the moment he came out of the womb, grasped the heel of his brother Esau and has lived the entirety of his life grasping at that which he could not have and went to all means to acquire that, deceiving, manipulating, orchestrating, taking advantage of. And this name change as a representative of the people of God is monumental. From the new Jacob will come the 12 tribes of Israel long into the future after the nation of Israel is established through the leadership of Moses. Secondly, this is very important because it tells us that Jacob has striven with God and with man and prevailed. So he's prevailed with God because in God's grace, he chose to bless Jacob and not punish him for a life filled with deceit and manipulation. He chose only to cripple him and not destroy him. Make no mistake about this. This wrestling match that ended, quote unquote, in a draw was not due to the strength or the tenacity of Jacob. It was due solely to the grace of God, not to render Jacob to dust, which he very easily could have done. He simply chose to cripple Jacob to remind him of this moment and of this lifelong struggle that Jacob has had, fighting with man and fighting with God. So his prevailing has more to do with God and his grace than it does with Jacob. Jacob does show tenacity in being unwilling to let go until this unordinary man blesses him. But it's really not about Jacob, it's about God. Jacob prevailing with man speaks of his ability to overcome Laban with the help of God, and it previews the anticipation of a favorable reunion with Esau, again as a part of God's gracious provision and protection. Jacob on his own had no hope with Laban, and Jacob on his own has no hope with Esau. It is only about the gracious protection and provision of God in Jacob's life. Jacob is now prepared to meet Esau. Now, it should be noted that this meeting with Esau is taking place just hours after the wrestling match with God has ended. Jacob has been up all night. He is exhausted. Yet here is Esau on the horizon. At this point, Esau would have already received the gift that Jacob has sent, the 550 plus animals that were sent to him in these five waves in an attempt to alleviate Esau's anger towards Jacob. And so this is kind of the introduction into what we're looking at today. We're going to cover verses 1 through 17, which is divided into two sections. The first one is the reconciliation of the brothers in verses 1 through 11. And then it is their plans for departure that will be in verses 12 through 17. And we'll deal with each of those passages separately for the sake of time. So in the ongoing outline that we're looking at, I didn't put the verse up there, I'm sorry. Number 4 here is Jacob meets Esau. So let's read together Genesis 33, verses 1 through 11. Then Jacob lifted his eyes and looked, and behold, Esau was coming and 400 men with him. So he divided the children among Leah and Rachel and the two maids. He put the maids and their children in front, and Leah and her children next, and Rachel and Joseph last. But he himself passed on ahead of them and bowed down to the ground 7 times until he came near to his brother. Then Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. He lifted his eyes and saw the women and the children and said, "Who are these with you?" So he said, "The children with whom God has graciously given your servant." Then the maids came near with their children, and they bowed down. Leah likewise came near with her children, and they bowed down. And afterwards, Joseph came near with Rachel, and they bowed down. And he said, "What do you mean by all this company which I have met?" And he said, "To find favor in the sight of my Lord." But Esau said, "I have plenty, my brother. Let what you have be your own." Jacob said, "No, please, if now I have found favor in your sight, then take my present from my hand, for I see your face as one sees the face of God, and you have received me favorably. Please take my gift which has been brought to you, because God has dealt graciously with me, and because I have plenty." Thus he urged him, and he took it. So the first thing we look at here is we break down the meeting between Jacob and Esau. Letter A is Jacob sees. The first part of verse 1 here, Jacob lifts his eyes and looked, and behold, Esau was coming and 400 men with him. So for the first time in 20 years, Jacob sees his brother, but he also sees the 400 men that are accompanying him. The one from whom Jacob fled because of the murderous threats is now within sight, riding with an entourage of 400 hunter warriors. Now, Jacob had been fearful before, knowing that Esau was coming, and now here he is. He can see him with his own eyes, and I would imagine that Jacob is shaking in his boots. Even though he has had this theophany, even though he has had this wrestling match with God, he doesn't know what to expect, but for the first time in 20 years, he sees this brother with whom he has never had a good relationship. Letter B, Jacob arranges. Continuing from verse 1 down to verse 3. So he divided the children among Leah and Rachel and the two maids. He put the maids and their children in front, and Leah and her children next, and Rachel and Joseph last. But he himself passed on ahead of them and bowed down to the ground 7 times until they came near to his brother. Now, if you remember, the night before, Jacob sent the entirety of his family across the Jabbok River, and he stayed behind in the camp. And there was no explanation for why Jacob made that decision. Seemingly, it put his family at great risk while he stayed behind in the event that Esau and his 400 marauders met up with the family before Jacob met up with the rest of the family. But divine providence took over, and the wrestling match ensued, and then Jacob has now caught up with the rest of the family. But here we see a significant change take place. Jacob takes the lead while putting his family behind him. This is the new Jacob, the leader, rather than the one who put his family seemingly at risk. It's also worth noting the placement order of the mothers and the children. This is the hierarchy, and it shows the favoritism that exists within the family. Unloved Leah at least ranked better than the maids, and you got to wonder how the maids felt being on the front line. Rachel and Joseph are at the back end, the furthest away from Esau and the 400 men. So now that the family is arranged to his liking, Jacob approaches Esau, and it says he bows to the ground 7 times. And when it says he bows to the ground, that's exactly what it means. He bends over and puts his forehead to the ground. And he does that 7 times. As he approaches his brother, he bows, he takes some steps, he bows again, he takes some steps, and he bows again. This is a sign of submission. It is Jacob's way of showing remorse for how he has treated his brother, and it is Jacob's way for seeking forgiveness from his brother. Now, it in no way reverses the blessing that Jacob received from his father Isaac. and it in no way renounces his position over his brother that was announced to Rebecca while Jacob and Esau were still in the womb, where God spoke to Rebecca and chose Jacob over Esau as the one with whom God would bless the descendants. It no way reverses that, and it is not Jacob's renouncement of that position. It is simply Jacob's way of reuniting with his brother and trying to make amends for how poorly he treated him. Now, it's also worth noting that the old Jacob would probably not have bowed low. He would have perhaps defiantly stood his ground and dared his brother Esau to do something about whatever has happened in the past and with whatever Esau had in his mind to do. This represents the change of character that has happened in the heart of Jacob as a result of the wrestling match that has just completed a short time earlier. Letter C, Esau embraces Jacob. Verse 4, then Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. This unexpected response of Esau is powerfully expressed in the Hebrew in five verbs that are piled up on top of one another. He ran, he embraced, he fell, he kissed, they wept. It is a thoroughly unexpected response from Esau. Jacob approached Esau like a humble servant who was about to get whacked. And Esau approaches Jacob like a long-lost brother who he has awaited to meet since the day he left. They weep together like they have always been inseparably the best of friends. Now, remembering that they never really got along makes this reunion that much more surprising. Esau was a man's man. He was a ruddy outdoorsman. He was the hunter who was favored by his father. Jacob was a homebody who was more of the herdsman, who was considered to be a mama's boy, and was the antithesis of his brother Esau. They didn't get along at all, which makes this reunion completely unexpected. We are left to wonder what happened in Esau's life that caused him to have this incredible change of heart. He was breathing murderous threats when Jacob fled 20 years earlier, and today it's as if nothing has happened and they have always been like twins, the best of friends, inseparable, doing everything together, loving each other like they always should. But in this moment, Jacob's prayer from just before the wrestling match has been answered. Genesis 32:11. Deliver me, I pray, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him that he will come and attack me and the mothers with the children. That was the prayer that Jacob prayed at the conclusion of that theophany, knowing in the heart of hearts that when he meets Esau, it's all over. His wives are likely going to be killed. His children are likely going to be executed. This was the depth of Jacob's fear. And in this moment, in this reunion with his brother, the prayer has been answered. Letter D, the brothers reconcile. Verse 5, after the weeping has concluded, he, Esau, lifted his eyes and saw the women and the children and said, who are these with you? So he, Jacob, said, the children whom God has graciously given your servant. So after they have run out of tears and their shoulders are soaking wet Esau asks about the people that are with Jacob, the women and the children. Notice Jacob's response here. It's very, very subtle. It would not stand out. He says, the children whom God has graciously given your servant. The word gracious in the Hebrew is the same word for favor. Jacob has shrewdly avoided the word blessed. Now, why would he do that? Well, he stole the blessing, right? The birthright and the birthright blessing some 20 years earlier. So Jacob very shrewdly avoids the word blessed and instead substitutes graciously, which is the word favored. God has shown me favor and has given me the people that you have inquired about. Jacob continues to take this submissive posture with Esau by calling him your servant. And this is from both the change of heart and character that has taken place in the heart of Jacob, but it's also an attempt to find favor, to find grace from his brother Esau. Jacob goes on to make the formal introduction of the family here in verse 6 and 7. Then the maids came near with their children, and they bowed down. 7, Leah likewise came near with her children, and they bowed down. And afterward, Joseph came near with Rachel, and they bowed down. All continue the posture of submission and servitude towards Esau, and there are no recorded words for us. Very likely, this was not the time for the wives or the children to speak up at all. These were tenuous moments between the brothers, and nothing needed to be said to jeopardize or risk spoiling the moment. So here in verse 8, we find something that is very, very important. Esau speaking, he said, "What do you mean by all this company which I have met?" Jacob replies and says, "To find favor in the sight of my Lord." What Esau is asking about is this overwhelming gift that has been paraded before Esau, this wave of 550 plus animals that Esau has received. And I don't know if you know what 550 animals might look like in a wave after wave of gifts, but it's a lot. And Esau says, what are you doing with all of this? And what does Jacob say? He says, to find favor, to find grace in the sight of my Lord. Jacob sought to win Esau's heart and to gain Esau's forgiveness through this overwhelming display of generosity. Esau questions why Jacob thought it would be necessary to send him this massive gift when, after all, we're brothers. Why would you feel a need to send me, your brother, this enormous gift of 550 plus animals? So this tells us that Jacob has lived the last 20 years under the cloud of his deceitful lifestyle, living with the guilt of what it is he's done to his brother, believing that Esau could never, ever forgive him, when Esau has apparently let this go for reasons we are never told. We have no idea what happened in Esau's life that enabled him to forget or to forgive what his brother had done to him. Verse 9, Esau said, "I have plenty, my brother. Let what you have be your own." What is clear by this statement is this: the gifts that Jacob sent had absolutely no bearing on Esau's willingness to forgive and to reconcile with his brother. Now, this is more important here in just a second. Verses 10 and 11, Jacob said, "No, please, if now I have found favor in your sight, then take my present from my hand, for I see your face as one sees the face of God, and you have received me favorably. Please take my gift, which has been brought to you, because God has dealt graciously with me because I have plenty. Thus he urged him, and he took it. So Jacob is insistent that Esau receive the gift. And what Jacob says here is important to understand for what it does not mean. And by what it does not mean, we can then understand what it is he is actually saying. As Jacob had wrestled with God and found God's favor, he has also wrestled with Esau in his previous life and is now finding favor with Esau as well. So he sees the same favor in Esau as he just found in God through this wrestling match. So when he looks at the face of Esau and finds forgiveness and grace, it's like he's looking in the face of God where he also found forgiveness and grace. It's forgiveness and grace where it is unexpected and undeserved. In Jacob's previous way of thinking, it was necessary for him to earn or to buy his forgiveness. So he sends this massive gift. In our previous way of thinking, we might think it's necessary to earn or to buy our forgiveness from God, and so we work real hard to earn or to deserve our salvation. But when we understand that grace from God is undeserved and it can't be bought, then we are overwhelmed by the grace and the forgiveness that we find in the face of God. And when we find forgiveness and grace in the face of fellow believers, it's like we're looking in the face of God. He's not assigning a position like God to Esau. He's simply saying that he's seeing grace and forgiveness from his brother, just like he experienced from God at the conclusion of that wrestling match. Because of the way Jacob had wronged his brother, he now wants to bless his brother and give him this gift because God has blessed him. And so when you and I want to be a blessing to God, we give not to earn, not to deserve, but because of the grace and the mercy of God, we feel compelled to give back. Does that make sense? You see, what Jacob is doing is he is now responding from the new character that has come out of the wrestling match. He sees grace and forgiveness from Esau just like he experienced from God at the conclusion of the wrestling match. And because of that, he wants to bless his brother. And now he's going to want to bless God as a result of what God has done for him. It's the same thing for us. Previously, before our salvation, we probably thought we needed to earn our salvation. And to do so, we had to buy it or we had to do a lot of really good things. But once we come to terms with the grace and the mercy of God, we understand that that's not how it works. But we still want to give to God. We still want to bless God. And we do so as a response to salvation, not as a means to earn it or deserve it. So because of the way Jacob had wronged his brother, he wants to bless him. So for this reason, he urges or he insists that Esau take the gift, which Esau eventually does. Letter E, the plans for departure. We're going to read this together, and then I'm going to break it down very quickly. This goes much faster than you might think. Verses 12 through 17, then Esau said, "Let us take our journey and go, and I will go before you." But he said to him, my Lord knows that the children are frail and that the flocks are in herds which are nursing are a care to me. And if they are driven hard one day, all the flocks will die. Please let my Lord pass on before his servant, and I will proceed at my leisure according to the pace of the cattle that are before me and according to the pace of the children until I come to my Lord at Seir. Esau said, please let me leave with you some of the people who are with me. But he, Jacob, said, what need is there? Let me find favor in the sight of my Lord. So Esau returned that day on his way to Seir. Jacob journeyed to Succoth and built for himself a house and made booths for his livestock. Therefore, the place is named Succoth. There's some debate about what exactly takes place in this last section. And this will make sense as we go through this. So verse 12, Esau said, let us take our journey and go, and I will go before you. So after this reunion of the brothers, it appears that Esau is now inviting Jacob to come with him and to live in Seir. In Esau's mind, there seems to be a desire to put the past behind them, to create new memories, and to enjoy this newly found camaraderie. They never got along in their previous life together, and now that they are brothers, Esau wants to enjoy the rest of their lives as brothers and live together in Seir. But Jacob really isn't sold on the idea. So we see in verse 13, he says, my Lord knows that the children are frail and that the flocks and herds which are nursing are a care to me, and if they are driven hard one day, all the flocks will die. So Jacob still takes a very submissive posture here, calling him my Lord and calling himself the servant, and he uses the children and the herd as a reason for them to travel separately. 400 hunters and a large flock of animals and children travel at very different speeds and have very different needs. But it continues in verse 14. Please let my Lord pass on before his servant, and I will proceed at my leisure according to the pace of the cattle that are before me and according to the pace of the children until I come to my Lord at Seir. So Jacob suggests that Esau and his men travel on their own, and then Jacob will go to Seir at some point, but it will be a much slower journey. And this is where the debate begins. Jacob says here that I will go to Seir, but he doesn't. So the question is he deceiving Esau? Or does Esau understand that Jacob is politely telling Esau that he doesn't want to live in Seir without actually saying, I don't want to live in Seir? Well, commentators are divided about what is actually taking place here. So verse 15, Esau said, please let me leave with you some of the people who are with me. But he, Jacob, said, what need is there? Let me find favor in the sight of my Lord. So Esau is willing to leave some men with Jacob as a means of protection, but again, Jacob refuses the offer and refuses the ongoing connection to Esau and wants to remain independent without specifically saying, I want to remain independent from you. So it's up for debate as to what Esau did or did not understand, or if Jacob is actually deceiving him. But we're not always told everything that happens in every encounter. So it's possible there's more dialogue than is recorded here. But what also comes into play that we sometimes don't remember is that what God told Jacob to do was to go back to the land of Canaan. Seir is not in Canaan. Traditionally, Seir is in the land of the Sodomites, which is a very distinct region of Canaan. And Jacob was not supposed to go outside of the region of Canaan. it would be unlikely that Esau would understand the rationale for that decision. So it's plausible that Jacob didn't want to offend Esau and come right out and say, well, God doesn't want me to go outside of Canaan, and I can't go and live with you, my brother. So it's possible that that Jacob is saying no without actually telling Esau, no, I don't want to live with you. We don't really know. It is up for debate, and this is why commentators are divided on this. But what we see here is that the brothers do go different ways, verse 16 and 17. So Esau returned that day on his way to Seir. Jacob journeyed to Succoth and built for himself a house and made booths for his livestock. Therefore, the place is named Succoth. So we don't have a map. I didn't put a map up for you to see, but Seir is the land of the Edomites, which is to the northeast of where they currently are. And the region that is believed to be the Succoth that is mentioned here is to the southwest, which is in the eastern part of the Jordan Valley, which means that Esau and Jacob traveled in opposite directions. The name Succoth means booths because Jacob made booths for the livestock, giving it that name. And this brings an end to the reunion between Jacob and Esau, and they will not meet again until chapter 35 when Isaac dies and they come back together for the burial of their father. It is believed that that takes place at least 10 years later. We'll talk more about that as we get into the next section. So Jacob has seen God bring a successful conclusion to two very, very dangerous encounters, one with Laban and this one with Esau, and both of these are within a matter of just a couple of days. Jacob is spiritually well-positioned for the future, but we're going to see that he gets spiritually lazy and disaster follows. What should have been a glorious continuation of the victories over Laban and Esau are instead followed by tragedies with his daughter Dinah and what his sons do in Shechem, and we're going to look at that at the next time. So when we look at the life of Jacob, we see these incredible theophanies that take place, these spiritual highs, and they are immediately followed by the carnality in Jacob's life. Even after this last theophany that preceded the wrestling match with God, which is as close to a personal encounter with God that one could have, we see the victory that he has with Esau and the fact that they have this incredible reunion. Jacob is again on a spiritual high, but it is followed by Jacob's carnality, which is going to lead into very, very troubling times. And what it shows us is that no matter how faithful we see God to be in taking us through very, very difficult circumstances, no matter how good God is in rescuing us from our own demise, we must never, ever, ever let our guard down, because right around every corner is the opportunity to depend upon ourselves, to rely upon our own wisdom, our own strength, and to forget about the God that we are dependent upon. And every time we do that, and every time Abraham did that, every time Isaac did that, and every time Jacob did that, the patriarchs of the nation of Israel, disaster followed. We would do well to remember the lessons that God has provided for us in his word. Let's pray together.